having a Christian home in an ungodly society. For no matter who you are, you have a family, you have a home, whether you're a part of a family or whether you're an individual yourself. And the challenge that we face is being in the world and yet not of the world. And God knew that we would face that challenge. In fact, He wants us to. In John 17, where we have the longest recorded prayer of Christ, He prayed in verse 15 that His disciples would not be taken out of the world. In fact, He was going to send them into the world in Mark 16 and verse 15. Just so, God wants you and I to be in the world, that we can be a light and a blessing to it. And in doing that, we glorify our Father which is in heaven, Matthew 5, 14 through 16. And yet God realizes the danger that we face in this world, and so He warns us of its deadly embrace so that it will not be able to strangle out our Christianity. And He says in chapter 2 and verse 15, love not the world, neither the things of the world. And here's the reason why. No matter what the world may offer, no matter how enticing that may seem, it can give you nothing of lasting value. For the world and everything in it is going to perish. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verses 10 through 12. Now, in light of that undeniable truth, Jesus poses this question. What would a man give in exchange for his soul? Or what would it profit a man if he gained the whole world and lost his soul? In Matthew 16 and verse 26, and here's the answer. You would be giving up that which is eternal to possess briefly that which is perishing. Now, brethren, that's not too smart, is it? Now, the object of this lesson is to present some principles that will help us maintain our Christian homes in an ungodly society. In order to do that, we must avoid some things that will harm our homes and covet those things that will strengthen our homes. And we're going to deal with the negative first, things that will harm our homes. Number one, we cannot allow the world to shape the values of a Christian home. For many, beloved, the battle will be won or lost on this field. For the world has its set of values, it has its set of priorities. And for the purpose of this lesson, I place them in three general categories: wealth, sex, and sports. Now, there is nothing wrong with these things per se, but the sin comes when we put the same emphasis on them that the world does. The world preaches that a man's worth or value is determined by how much he possesses, how much money he has, or how many possessions that he has. And it has made a lot of converts. I think it was this philosophy that caused Lot to look to the well-watered lands of the east and pitch his tents towards Sodom in Genesis chapter 3 and verses 10 through 12. You know, six chapters later, Lot is no longer pitched towards Sodom. Lot and his family are in Sodom in Genesis 19 and verse 1. But beloved, that's the world working at its best. It entices with more is better until you're overcome. And for a Christian, that's deadly. It would have been better for us never to have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and then allow the world to strangle out our spiritual lives. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verses 20 through 22. Now, I know that just Lot was delivered out of Sodom, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verses 6 and 7. But rarely do our decisions affect only ourselves. Much of his family was lost. And the two daughters that did escape with him were morally bankrupt. Genesis 19 verses 30 through 38. All because Lot looked east through the eyes of the world, which says that money and possessions are your number one priority. Fathers, I'm not unmindful of the fact that we are to provide for our families, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. But as Bill suggested, that cannot be our number one priority. That cannot be to the neglect of other important things. There is a telling story back in 1 Kings chapter 20, in verses 39 and 40. As a prophet of God disguises himself to bring God's judgment against a king, and as a king passes by, the prophet says unto him, a man who was passing by turned aside and gave this man unto me, and he said, keep him. And if by any means he be missing, thy life shall be for his life, or thou shalt pay a talent of silver. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. Men, you and I can be busy here and there chasing that old pot of gold. And we can turn around one day and find our families are gone. Don't let the world get you caught up with this. Because regardless of what it may say, a man's life consisteth not of the abundance of things which he possesses. Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. You and I are going to leave this world exactly the way we came into it, naked and with nothing. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7. And on that occasion, the only success story worth telling is if we have favorably etched ourselves and our families in the minds of God. Sex. The world's number one seller, everything from toothpaste to cars. Alan Eisenhower, Jack mentioned him, he accompanies me each year. He's a tremendous soldier for the cause of Christ, and I love him dearly as a friend as well. But he has he orders our material for our Bible classes and takes care of the teachers as well. And I think it was almost a year ago, a teenager complained that they were talking about sex in Bible study. Imagine talking about sex in the Bible study. Brethren, we better start talking to our young people about sex in the Bible study. Because if we don't, guess who is? Hollywood will. You know, they pipe their perverted idea of sex into literally millions of homes every day. They parade half-dressed women, half-dressed men in front of the screen, and they literally say, how do you match up? This is what femininity ought to be. This is what masculinity ought to be. Brethren, I wonder how many young people go into a marriage relationship already feeling a sense of inadequacy because they don't measure up to what Hollywood says this is the standard. How many young people are forced into a sexual situation because everyone else is doing it? Television and movies, they glamorize premarital sex. But they also glamorize extramarital affairs as well. You know what's even sadder? When I see grown Christian couples going to R-rated movies where they know that there is going to be nudity and sexual situations in those movies. You know, brethren, I have preached on this subject when I knew they were in the audience. Maybe there are some here today. And I have asked the wives, what do you think when they parade across that screen a naked woman? Do you turn to your husband and say, what do you think, honey? I was just looking at her face. I talked to a man, it was after they had come out with HBO, and it was a new thing back in those days. And we were sitting down, and he was defending bringing that into his home, and he told me, he said, Jay, he says, seeing naked women doesn't bother me. His wife was sitting there shaking her head. That's right. I have some land. I asked the husbands, what do you think when they parade a naked man across the street in front of your wife? Brethren, what can we think by putting someone that we love in that kind of a temptation? In light of Matthew 5 and verse 28 that says, if you look upon a woman to lust, you have committed adultery already in your heart. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 22, that's not a slip of the pen. It says to avoid even the appearance of evil. But brethren, you know what they're doing, don't you? They are mocking, ridiculing, and degrading something that God intended to be a wonderful part of the marriage relationship. You know what Amos 5 and verse 15 says? It says, hate evil and love the good. Brethren, we must never allow this world to dictate the morals of a Christian family. Sports, the great American pastime that has turned into an obsession in so many lives of Christians. I don't know what season I hate more. I don't know which one I dread seeing coming more. Whether it's Little League, softball, football, or basketball. As I watch Christians exchange the assembly for a field and the love of souls for a television. Brethren, when that occurs, we have forgotten some things. We have forgotten where our heart needs to be. In Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, it says, if you be risen with Christ. And you know, beloved, there's an excellent passage if we would just simply use it. You have to be buried with Christ to be risen with Christ. But if you be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth at the right hand of God. Set your affections on things above, not on things of the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with God in Christ. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall we also appear with him in glory. Mortify, therefore, your members which are upon this earth. We have forgotten that we have been bought with a price. That we are to glorify God in our body, in our spirits, which are God's. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10, 19 and 20. We have forgotten that we are not to be conformed to this world, but we're to be transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you can prove whether it is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God, that we are to present our bodies as a living sacrifice unto God, holy and acceptable, which is your reasonable service. Romans 12, verse 1 and 2. We have forgotten our duty to fear God and keep his commandments. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. Brethren, we must not allow the world standards to become the standard of our values in a Christian home. Positively, and there are some things positively, things that will strengthen our homes, that will make them strong. And brethren, we need to have strong homes. God desires that you and I be a blessing to this world. You know, a passage that I really love is in Micah 5 and verse 7, where he says that we are to be as a dew from the Lord and as showers upon the grass. That's a wonderful sentiment, isn't it? You and I are to be a blessing. And I cannot imagine a sound, faithful Christian home not being a blessing, either in the community they live in or into the church as well. We are to be a blessing for the Lord. And again, I'm going to list these qualities under three general categories. Faithful, content, and loving. Faithful. You know, brethren, we're all headed down the valley of death. And when that time comes for me, whoever may preach that service, and I want them to preach, if he could sum up my existence in one word, I would like that word to be faithful. Wouldn't you? But you know, that's not always going to be the case. And there's an example that I want to use, and it's back in 1 Kings 13. If you like to follow along, but actually the background of it is in 1 Kings chapter 12. Solomon dies, and his son Rehoboam reigns in his stead. And the people plead with Rehoboam to lessen the burdens that have been put upon them by Solomon. And Rehoboam inquires from the council of two different groups, the older men and the younger men, and he accepts the counsel of the younger men, and the tribes are divided. 10 tribes going to the north and 2 tribes staying to the south. And then Jeroboam enters the scene, and he becomes king over the 10 tribes to the north. But he recognizes that he is not there by the popular choice of the people, but rather by the foolishness of Rehoboam. And so he's afraid that if the people go back to Jerusalem to worship, that they'll go back under the reign of Rehoboam and then turn around and kill him. And so he builds 2 golden calves, one at Dan and one at Bethel. And he says unto the people, behold thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. And 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 15 says that Jeroboam made Israel to sin. Well, you know God wouldn't tolerate a thing like that. And so he sends a young prophet down to cry against the altar at Bethel. And he tells this young prophet what he's to say. He says, O altar, altar, thus saith the Lord, behold, a child shall be born unto the house of David, Josiah by name. And upon thee shall he offer the priest of high places which burn incense upon thee, and men's bones shall be burnt upon thee. And he gave a sign that same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be rent, and the ashes there upon it shall be poured out. And as Jeroboam is getting ready to offer up his burnt or incense, this young prophet breaks through the crowd, and he repeats what God has said. And Jeroboam stretches out an arm and points to get that man. But when he stretches out his arm, God makes it stiff so they can't draw it back to his body again. The altar is rent and the ashes that are upon it are poured out. And Jeroboam realizes that the hand of God is behind this thing. And so he appeals to the young prophet to go to God on his behalf. And the young prophet does, and his arm is restored. And then he wants to take him home and give him a feast and a reward from the treasury? And to which the young prophet replies that he cannot, because God had instructed him to eat no bread, drink no water, nor return again the way that he went. And so the young prophet departs in a different way, and he heads home. And here's all of that to bring this up. There was already an old prophet in that city, but an old prophet who didn't have the courage to stand up against what Jeroboam was doing. But his sons were there, and they witnessed all that had transpired, and they come home and told Daddy. Well, he wants to meet this young man. And so he saddles his donkey, and he heads down the road until he finds him sitting under an oak tree. And he invites him to come home with him. And the young prophet says, "I cannot," and he repeats what he had told Jeroboam. And the record says that the old prophet lied to him. He told him, "An angel of the Lord came unto me and told you to come and bring you back to my house." And so the young prophet, believing him, got up and went home with him. And then as they were sitting at the table, the word of the Lord came unto that old prophet and caused him to cry out. And said, "For as much as thou hast disobeyed the mouth of the Lord, and obeyed not the commandments which the Lord thy God did command thee, but hast come back and eaten bread and drinking water in the place which the Lord did say to thee, eat no bread nor drink no water, thy carcass shall not come into the sepulchre of thy father." I don't know how tense that scene was. But I can guarantee you the old prophet is probably shamefaced at this point. The young prophet is sitting there realizing he has been deceived and he is going to die. But finally he gets and he goes on his way. He meets a lion and he is put to death. Well, passerbys, they see this scene of the donkey standing on this side, the young prophet laying there, and the lion standing on the side, not bothering either one of them. And they go into the city and they tell what they have seen. The old prophet, he knows immediately who it was. And he says, "It's the young prophet." So he goes out and he gets him and he brings him home and he lays him in his own grave. And he tells his sons, "When I die, I want you to bury me beside him, my bones beside his bones." Brethren, can you imagine that funeral service? And the discussion of bones? Bones, bones. Listen, I don't care whose bones they lay me beside. Let them say he's faithful. Let them say he's faithful. And you know that means a lot. More than some people think. It means standing up for what you believe and living it. It's not just enough to be opposed. This old prophet was opposed to what Jeroboam was doing, but he didn't speak out against it. And as a result of that, his sons were there. Have you read Obadiah verses 11 through 13 lately? You want to know something, brethren? When we stand silently by, we condone the wrong. There is no neutral ground. You can't get on the fence. I wish elders and preachers in this brotherhood of ours would get the idea. They keep waiting for this thing to pass them by. The fence is gone. I wonder how many old prophets would turn to a young preacher and tell him, "Oh, listen, you'll learn in time." I hope to God I never learned the lessons of sitting back and being quiet and allowing error to go free. It means standing up for what you believe in. This is no time for the fainting heart. The Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 13, "I believe, therefore have I spoken." We need to speak out against it. Darkness cannot come where there's light. That's why the darkness hates the light. John 3, 19 and 20. You know, a number of years ago, we were trying to establish a Christian school back in the Steubenville, Ohio area. But we had to make a trip to Columbus in order to find out what was all involved that we could be accredited. And that was a trip of about 100 miles. And back in those days, I had a rickety old car. I wasn't sure it would make it 100 miles. So a friend of ours loaned us his car, and it was one of those 4 miles. Now, I never buy one of those, but I drive one. So it was down low to the ground, and it was fun to drive. We went to Columbus, and on the way back, it was dark before we started getting to home. And if you have never driven on old Route 22 from Cambridge to Steubenville, that's about a 47-mile trip, you have never been on a windy road. I think you could hit all points of the compass in a mile. And this little car was down. It was down low, and the headlights they were. It would shine right down on the road, and I was terrified. I didn't think we was going to make it. Now, I'm beating the floor, trying to find where the lights are. You know, I'm trying to get the brights up, and they weren't there. And finally, the brother told me, he said, "Listen, they're on the handle," and that's the first time I'd seen that. And they were on the steering wheel. And I believe that that was the only reason we made it there safely, is we finally figured out how to put on the high brake. I'm going to tell you something, brother. I don't know where your switch is, but you need to get your brights on. We need to be a light in our homes. We need to be a light to the world. So when it comes our time to leave, there won't be any discussion of bones. They'll talk about faithful. They'll talk about a reunion in heaven. And that's what a Christian family ought to be. Content. You know, that means to be well pleased, satisfied. To be content with such things as you had, for he has said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." Hebrews 13 and verse 5. There is contentment based upon a promise. God is with us and he will never leave us. But brother, I want to tell you, there are few things more devastating to a Christian home than discontentment. In Luke chapter 15, another passage Bill stole from me. We have the prodigal son coming to his father. He comes in repentance, and he comes confessing his sins to a father who runs to meet him. And he has an older brother who is discontent. And as he comes home, he sees the celebration going on. And he becomes envious. And have you ever noticed that the discontent are rarely content to keep it to themselves? And so they voice it. And in the voicing of it, it deepens. They never did that for me. They never did that for me. So he goes from discontent to envy to self-pity. But please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that you have to live your life without bettering it in any way. I'm not suggesting that at all. If you do that lawfully and according to the will of God. But what I am saying is that no matter what you have or where you are, to be content with that. In Philippians 4 and verse 11, Paul wrote, "Not that I speak in respect or want, for I have learned whatever state I am therewith to be content." Do you know where he penned that passage from? It was prison. But how do you get content in prison? Paul said, "I learned it." He knew what you and I need to know if we don't already know it. That circumstances and surroundings aren't really what's important in a person's life. It's not what and where you are. It's who and what you are that really counts. Brethren, it's an absolute true statement in 1 Timothy 6, 6 through 8, that godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, it's certain that we can carry nothing out. And with food and having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. You cannot buy a happy home. It's a state of mind. Be happy and satisfied with whatever God blesses you with. For what is really important, beloved, that's yet to come. And you know what is the real danger with filling our pockets with this world's good? Then when that time comes, you might not be so ready to leave it. And beloved, we need to be ready to go. Love. That's an indispensable ingredient to a Christian home. Loving God will set our priorities, Matthew 22 and verse 37. Loving Christ will keep us in his commandments, John 14, verse 15. Loving the brotherhood will keep us involved, 1 Peter 2 and verse 17. But the love of a mate, that's a love of a Christian family, that's a little bit different. Having a family that is serving God together will enhance our worship, to be sure. It will enhance our service to God, to be sure. But they add another element. It's a physical one, one of warmth. To be able to come home to a mate and put your arms around them when you don't know where else to turn. And brethren, if you're, well, I know for those who are gospel preachers, I speak to myself, I come home sometimes so frustrated, you cannot imagine. And to be able to come in and put my arms around my wife and her put her arms around me, and I have told her repeatedly, and I think she feels the same way, I know she feels the same way about me, that I don't know what I'd do without her. A mate to laugh with, to cry with, to rejoice with, to mourn with, to grow old with. Thank God for strong, loving Christian mates. Children. What would children do without a loving Christian home? We have a two-year-old that's going through potty training. And when she goes on the potty, the whole family has to go into the bathroom. I am so glad nobody else can see this. But we clap. Give her five M&Ms. But we bandaged our scraped knees. We rejoice with them, with their accomplishments. We sympathize with their failures. But most important, we teach them. We teach them by word, to be sure. You can't save their soul without that. Romans 1 verse 16 makes that clear. But we teach them by example. If they'll see a love and a joy for Christianity in our homes, they'll want that in their homes. We have a Christian home that's in the world, but we must not be of the world. Let's not invite it into our front doors, that it can harm the ones that we genuinely love. Let's echo Joshua's sentiments. As for me and my house, we serve the Lord. Thank you.